Bailing out Wall Street is the only way to save Main Street, so says the president.
And in the last 24 hours, many founders, investors that I've talked to have been desperately trying to get their money out.
We are at the beginning of a very classic late cycle, late big cycle debt crisis.
Can you characterize everything that the Fed has done this past week as essentially flooding the system with money?
Yes.
The Bitcoin system is so perfect that I think it's going to be the future.
All right. Hey, Dave.
Hey, how's it going?
It is going well. We are, you know, almost into the weekend.
It's very close. I just saw Alex and he told me he listens to this podcast. So hi, Alex. We have at least one listener.
That's amazing.
We have more than one, actually. I was looking at our analytics. We're not doing too bad for like a new podcast that doesn't get promoted too much. So to all you listeners out there, we appreciate you. We know that there's a lot of Bitcoin podcasts. We try to keep it fresh and casual and give you a few stories that you may not have been hearing on other podcasts. This was kind of an interesting week. There's more concern about CBDCs that's starting to make it into kind of the online discourse. But you have an interesting take on this. And we've been talking recently about how CBDCs are sort of inevitable. Maybe we could just jump into that. CBDCs seem to be sort of inevitable. Can you talk about like why we think so? Like why all these activists who are working against CBDCs, and rightfully so, because we don't like that they're inevitable, right? It's not that. It's just that we're sort of being realistic and looking at sort of broad macro trends and saying, listen, you know, political activism in the traditional sense isn't going to stop this train, which it's sort of like once you get there, then it opens up your mind to other types of solutions. I think it's a really important conversation, but maybe could you just kind of like summarize what's the reasoning there?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that CBDCs are inevitable because they are a technological trend. They are a technological response to private market cryptocurrencies, private market digital assets that have basically placed it on the government's plate to respond. And the government, they have to. And I think that in addition to that, like just technologically speaking, they enable the government to do a lot more of what it wants to do, which is basically like have more power, have more control. Obviously, different states will claim that they are acting altruistically, and we can make that determination of like whether they actually are or not. That's besides the fact that they have an incentive to basically like grow. And then the other trend is that is actually more important is basically just like the game theory of it all, that like we're in this environment right now where like every time, you know, China does something, we think that we have to like respond, or like, you know, Europe introduces some sort of new technology, we have to respond. And so there's like a global payment network that is being developed around central bank digital currencies, central bank digital currency, like global interoperability. And there's no scenario where the United States isn't a part of that. Like there's no scenario where we see like the rest of the countries make an interoperable global CBDC payment network, and we just say, oh, we're comfortable with 1,000 stablecoin providers, and you can just interact with dollar stablecoins on that network, and that's what like dollars are, right? Like that's because that's really like the free market alternative for dollars to a CBDC is having all of our like commercial banks, or like basically just let 1,000 stablecoin payment companies bloom. And there's no way that's happening. I mean, like, stablecoins are like, we think as Bitcoiners that like Bitcoin is the most discussed topic in Washington with respect to crypto more broadly, but it's actually stablecoins. And so they're trying to, like, you know, regulate the stablecoins. And so that is, and then moving beyond that, all it takes is one government or like regime or administration is actually the right word to like let this stuff out, like take this stuff out of the bottle, and then it's out there. Mm-hmm. It can't be put back in the bottle. And so like,
well, that's the same with
present or anyway.
Yeah. No, but that's the same with Bitcoin itself. Like, Bitcoin is a mix of technologies that when combined were enabled this private decentralized currency to take shape. But the inventions that led to Bitcoin are technological innovations. Like, people who aren't kind of in the Bitcoin space, I don't think you appreciate, if you're both not a technologist and you're not understanding Bitcoin, like, it, the reason you're hearing this word Bitcoin, the reason this is a new thing now and not in the 90s, not in the 80s, not 10 years ago, or it was 10 years ago, not 20 years ago, is because the technology did not exist. So that there was an invention, a set of inventions, which Bitcoin is. And once those are let out of the bottle, so to speak, those inventions make money, digital money, more efficient and give you much more flexibility. There's a lot of use cases for those individual inventions that combined make up Bitcoin. And so, once you discover a new technology for ledgers and for money, digital money, like, of course, like, all the different stakeholders in the current money system are going to say, what can I take from that invention to make my system better? And so that's another reason it's sort of inevitable. It's like, like you said, the stablecoin issuers are doing that. But it doesn't really like make sense for the treasury, which ultimately provides the money, for them not to also look. You know, it's just like when they print paper money that has more fraud prevention, right? Like holograms and guilloche patterns and all these types of things that they put on the money. Those are technologies, right? And when a new technology, like before there were holograms or before there was RFID or whatever, like, they didn't have those things and now they do. And there's just no like way to stop that type of thing from happening. Like, that's how technology works. So.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's in this broader trend of technology driving decentralization, or at least giving people the tools to decentralize, because you could also make the case that, you know, big tech super centralized, and there are multiple sides to this coin. However, big picture, there are like forces that want to use technology as like a centralizer, and then forces that want to use technology as like as a decentralizer. And so like there are that it really pits like, you know, CBDCs against Bitcoin. And I think that, I mean, you can hypothetically use other cryptocurrencies as your like decentralization mechanism or tool or whatever, what have you, but it's not as decentralized. You don't have all the nodes, you don't have the network effects, you don't have the like the founder that is gone, right? Like, Bitcoin is like much more decentralized. Like, even I was thinking about like the block size war, and like how people have been talking about that kind of with respect to spam, and just how like how important that was, that the block size was kept small so that like individuals can run nodes and the network can be like really decentralized. Because if not, then like, you know, how many nodes might there be today? You know, like 50 nodes. And then like Bitcoin just gets like shut down. Or I don't know. I'm speculating about something that I know enough about to like kind of get it, but don't know like the yeah. all of the nitty gritty. But
sure. Yeah. No, that's, I've never done that mental exercise. Like, I wonder if you could do some kind of back of the envelope calculation for the rough number of nodes that you could imagine would exist given the size of the blockchain, and well, really, in the size that it would have grown to, right? Because if there had been big blocks, there really would probably be a lot more adoption, or at least that's one possibility. Mm-hmm. I remember back in the day during the block size war, there were, you know, Microsoft, Amazon, both started to start accepting Bitcoin in their for some types of purchases. They stopped because it just the technology wasn't ready, right? But the big blocks would have allowed them to process enough transactions that they maybe could have used it. So it could be that Bitcoin would have like won temporarily, but then been co-opted. And so instead of that, we did the opposite. We made it decentralized first, and now we're struggling with adoption and scale and so on.
Yeah, exactly. And that's like, I think that is a micro, or not a micro, but an example of a problem that like team decentralization faces.
It would be funny. Like, what if like CBDCs are such poor branding, but Bitcoin is such a strong brand that the Fed just tries to take over Bitcoin Cash as its CBDC?
I don't know. I think that's funny, but that would be amusing. I mean, it is interesting though, like in Nigeria, nobody wants the Nigerian CBDC. There's all mm-hmm. like crypto is, I mean, Bitcoin, but also like stable coins and others are like super popular there.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I don't know. It's, I see the Fed just like doing some sort of, there has to be some sort of incentive mechanism to like get people to use CBDCs. I think because they're so unpopular, I think it might be like an airdrop during a crisis or something like that.
Well, I don't know how these transitions work, but I remember talking to people when I visited Paris about how I went to a supermarket. And this was in the mid 2000s, I guess, so maybe before 2010. And when you check out at the supermarket, there was on the cash register, the amount that faces you showed you both euros and francs. And I asked my friend, like, why is it showing you francs? There's no francs. And she said, it's because older people really, really hate the euro. And only want to deal in francs and think in francs.
Interesting.
And it was like for the older generation. I don't think that they can pay in francs, but they just want to see the price in francs.
Are francs, was that Swiss or was that a French currency?
French francs. Yeah, oh. Swiss francs too.
Interesting. Very interesting. Yeah. I just know that like a lot of people like work in Switzerland, but like live across the border in France. Yeah. But yeah. Interesting.
But so I don't know how they, you know, because that's a case study, right? How do you replace an entire currency with another central bank's currency? It's easy. I mean, in some sense, they don't have to incentivize you. They just say you have to pay taxes in this thing.
I think Fedcoin will just like take the dollar's brand. The dollar has a good brand.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And you're, you know, most people use mobile banking and your app will be able to interact with this new token. And, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. What'll be interesting is, like the integration of Bitcoin into everything.
I think, let's talk about that.
So it's hitting roadblocks with Custodia.
Yeah. What happened with Custodia?
So the Federal Reserve ruled against Custodia Bank, which is a Wyoming
federal
judge ruled against Custodia Bank in a lawsuit that they had brought against the Federal Reserve. They were claiming that the Fed basically unlawfully rejected their application for a Fed master account, which would have allowed them to have basically direct access to the main node within the dollar payment network and the benefits that come with that. And the judge ruled that the Fed has the discretion to deny those accounts, and that the Fed also, the Fed had previously listed that the reason it denied it was because Custodia, basically because Custodia was a crypto bank,
right?
And so that I think is a hurdle for banks that are trying to harmonize Bitcoin and other cryptos, because I think Custodia did stuff with custody ETH too. So banks that are trying to be custodians of digital assets and digital dollars, it's the Fed doesn't want to play with them, basically.
I hadn't thought about that, but I don't think it was mentioned in the ruling or anything, but I wonder if things would have shaken out differently if Ethereum had not been part of their plan, have it only been Bitcoin.
I think that it doesn't matter to the Fed. I think one thing that's interesting is whether the fact that Custodia is full reserve or not matters. I think that the basically Custodia is trying to, or was trying to offer people pass through access to Fed master accounts,
mm-hmm.
or to dollars directly held one to one at a Fed master account.
Yep.
And the Fed to date has not let anybody create a business that does that.
Yep.
So tinfoil hat on.
It is tied into CBDCs though, because they're kind of well, we will do that when we're ready with a CBDC, but we're not going to use the banking system. It's an intermediary.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point. I think because you could imagine if Custodia were allowed to do that, then they could provide you with access to digital dollars held in a Fed master account.
Yeah.
Which are different than dollars held in your bank account, which are claims to those digital dollars,
yeah.
Not backed one to one.
Yeah.
And so if the world is exploding, what do you want? Do you want your Custodia one to one Fed master account dollars, or do you want Wells Fargo? And I'm using them as an example. Please don't sue us, Wells Fargo, right?
Right. Any bank.
Any yeah. bank, it's not that. And so that is, I think, it's a it could potentially destabilize the banking system, which mm-hmm. Jerome Powell does not want.
Right, there you go. Well, and Nick Bhatia talks about running up the pyramid. So mm-hmm. when there's a currency crisis or a financial crisis, people, whatever layer of money you're on, you try to move up one layer, two layers, as far, as many layers as you can. So if you have, if you lent money out and you have a document that says somebody's going to give you money eventually, now you're going to want those dollars in your bank account. The dollars are harder than the credit you extended. They're still not as hard as dollars in the Federal Reserve. They're still not as hard as what the Federal Reserve is backed by, which is debt, and then there's gold and Bitcoin. There's these assets at the very top of the pyramid that are nobody's liability. And I suppose a master account at the Fed would be one layer down, right? So you're not owning treasuries. You're owning dollars at the Fed backed by treasuries. And
I guess so. Yeah. Yeah, it's the full faith and credit of the.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. But so And so, so I guess they just don't want you accessing that. They want to keep institutional access to that layer.
Yeah. And obviously the most prominent example of this, which we keep talking about, is the Narrow Bank. The Narrow Bank was denied like a month. So I'm not sure. There was some sort of update that like that happened with them. They are like just a business model where they offer people basically like Fed master accounts and like pass on some of the interest, keeping a little bit of, for themselves, that the Fed pays to hold reserves there. Something like that. And like super simple. Yeah. And I mean, basically a CBDC, but intermediated through the Narrow Bank is it's like, that's like basically what it is. And the Fed is not, they're not down. And honestly, there have been some senators that have been kind of on this. I know Pat Toomey, he has like written amicus briefs in support of Custodia, but like the issue is just, I think it's too complicated and like out of scope for people to care about. And that like the Fed is just going to keep railroading everybody until like they're ready to do what they want to do, because this is like, this is not, however unjust this might be, it's like, there's no public outcry. You're like, it's just, it's a challenge.
Yeah.
It's an uphill battle.
Yeah, definitely. Well, what else should we, touch upon today? So, there's, the oil, the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, story was interesting. So I guess what happened was when oil prices were spiking before the 2022 election, the Biden administration drew them down, trying to lower prices to affect the election.
That's what we can infer from reading the news.
Obviously. Yeah. Let's be real. We keep it real in this podcast. Come on.
Yeah.
That's what was going on. And then oil prices came down a bit, and they chose not to refill it. So now we're at a case where we have record low SPRs levels, and there may be oil shocks in our future. So that's fun. But I guess the reason this is an interesting story for me is really simply, it's the perfect example of central planning failing. And failing because people are people, and you know, everybody has their own incentives to maintain power and wealth and gain wealth and so on. And so it's kind of the tragedy of the commons in a sense, but like with the not tragedy of the commons, the opposite, the tragedy of centralized power. Like, you know, you have this petroleum reserve. It's just like a money printer in a sense, the petroleum reserve. It's just the ability to control markets. And it's tempting to do it, and you have to have like a really strong kind of culture and a culture that restrains behavior and creates like norms around behaviors of politicians, in order to prevent this type of looting from happening. But what's happened is now we have kind of this political culture of looting. It's widespread. And here's another example of it. So we've looted our own emergency supplies of oil and didn't have even the wherewithal to refill it when it was convenient to do so.
Yeah, exactly. And that's I think that it's pretty interesting that this thing exists in general, but it also makes sense why it does. But yeah, interesting. And then also the government, you know, accountability office released that the federal government made like over $200 billion in improper payments this year that like it just could not like correctly account for. It's just like errors and crazy stuff. I thought one thing I think was kind of interesting in terms of Bitcoin this week because it was a pretty light week in terms of news. I think that Coinbase partnering with Lightspark to bring Lightning to Bitcoin, or to Coinbase, I think that's cool. I think that it's interesting that Coinbase had to outsource that. But you know, good for them for like finally doing it. Great for Lightspark for getting that additional client. Interesting that from my perspective, Lightning for exchanges makes sense.
Yes.
What do you think about that?
I do. I think that's its use case. I mean, it's the institutional settlement layer. I don't know that it will survive as an end user technology. It could, but so far, wallet providers have been unable to kind of make a seamless user experience that allows you to manage your own liquidity. Listen, nobody wants to manage their own liquidity.
Yeah.
We can
it's
talk
hard about, enough already, when you're not managing your liquidity for your own node, right? It's hard enough to manage your dollar liquidity, right?
You know, you could do something where you make it easy. I mean, people do more complicated stuff all the time. I'm always surprised at how difficult it is to pay for something nowadays, even with a card. There's multiple clicks, there's multiple things you have to be thinking about, or taps. There's the old example of driving a car. Why do you know, driving a car is very complicated and expensive, but you do it because the value outweighs all of that. And so learning Bitcoin or learning how to manage your Lightning wallet, theoretically it should be manageable, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's just that I think it's actually that the concepts behind the complexity are too new. So yeah. it's like managing your liquidity is not that hard, but knowing what you're doing while you're managing your liquidity is very hard. And so if we can have a user interface that allows you to do that, but uses metaphors that you're already used to, just somehow makes it relatable without having to get you to understand what's really happening, then it could be that Lightning is usable as an end user technology in a phone. But as it stands now, it looks like Lightning is probably not that. It's probably a fast, cheap way to move Bitcoin around among large institutions. Actually, going back to the block size war, again, there was a lot of debate about Lightning because Lightning was being specced out at the time, and it was sort of
the solution.
It was the solution that small blockers were look, just wait until level two, layer two technologies are here. Back then, the big blockers, one of the arguments they made was, well, the way this works is you're only going to be able to have these channels are only going to have enough liquidity if they're among big institutions. Mm-hmm. So what you're doing is actually handing Bitcoin over to large institutions like banks and exchanges, which is funny because you might have been right about that. I'm not a big blocker, but that that turned out to be sort of true.
Well, I think it's worth examining what everybody says with an open mind. But
absolutely. Yeah. And there's other layer twos now. So it could be that Lightning is that, for institutions, and that that's not the consumer layer two. We have Liquid and some other interesting technologies.
No, it's really interesting. I think that is something that's that needs to be unlocked. That layer two or three or whatever on top of main chain. We're not going to be transacting on the main chain if Bitcoin is used day to day. I don't think that is feasible. And no. So how do people do it?
But there's an argument raging right now among people who are pro or against covenants, and a few other BIPs that are being considered.
Yeah.
Because there's this faction of people that say Bitcoin is for everyone. If you don't control a UTXO, are you truly sovereign? Don't we want to bring the values of Bitcoin and the freedom it provides to everyone? But if you have to control a UTXO to be sovereign, then you are you're not free, right? It's then Bitcoin's only for rich elites. But then there's this other side, which frankly I'm kind of gravitating towards, which is don't break it. Please, please don't break it. And if it's a settlement layer and it needs to remain a settlement layer, that's quite expensive to use for the foreseeable future. Like our plans are measured in centuries, you know, like
exactly.
The Bene Gesserit.
Let's not break anything. Yeah.
Let's keep it. Let's talk about covenants. Let's do everything, mm-hmm. but let's do that for 10 years. Like, let's really be sure.
Yeah. I'm with you. I think it would be really nice to have something like foolproof fast, but yeah, I'm with you on the not breaking it.
And then they'll say, well, but then there's going to be all these other technologies that come along and, other blockchains will do it, or, you know, we need to make sure that we do it before CBDC. I don't know about any of that. I think this thing is decentralized enough now. It's decentralized enough now that that what's important is that the protocol doesn't become broken. We don't need mm-hmm. it to scale for it to survive, is my point. We don't need it to scale for it to survive.
Yeah, and
survival also, is of paramount importance.
I mean, like, this is, I don't know. I'm talking completely out of a combination of like lack of serious thought about this and ignorance. So just temper that. But like, could there not be a period where like a lot of people are, paying with, USDT on Liquid or like dollars on Lightning, like the Taproot assets on Lightning or CBDCs, but like, and like that's your daily liquidity, but you're using Bitcoin for your savings and you are like, you know, only spending in like your dirty money, you know, when you have to, stuff like that. Like, I don't know. I think that there are like crafty ways around it where you don't necessarily have to like scale Bitcoin immediately to like take over.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. As long as it survives, it will anyway. So let's just make sure it survives.
Yeah, it's incredible. It's, I mean, just being working in this ecosystem for the past few years, like I remember earlier, like it was not, there was a lot more like inter-coin competition, a lot of like scams. Mm-hmm. Like mm-hmm. you had like even like, you know, FTX was saying that like Solana was like the future and that Bitcoin was like dead. And I think there's a lot more just mainstream acceptance around that like Bitcoin has succeeded, and that it is here to stay. But yeah, I agree with you that there is some unsolved dispute around what, it's like how to scale. Is that the question, do you think, that people are like stuck on? Like, how do we scale? Well, maybe there's a question within that, which is like what are like metrics of success with respect to scaling Bitcoin?
Yeah, that's a great question.
Because I know people that say that Bitcoin has already won.
Right. And And you know, if it's about access to Bitcoin by people who are sort of from the poorer countries, you know, that's a very different problem than extending adoption in developed countries. And there could be, you know, I think you kind of have to order those things. I guess one of the things I wonder about the Covenant crowd is, do they believe that if we don't scale by a certain time, that this ship will sail? Like, what's the rush?
Yeah, I agree. Well, I mean, if you look at people's lives, like, people have goals. Like, yeah. You could even take like Napoleon. Napoleon wanted to like conquer XYZ before he died, and he didn't. I mean, he died on an island, but like, you know. So yeah, I don't know. I think time. Yeah, that, I think I see where they're coming from, but I feel like Peter McCormick. I'm like, I don't know enough, you know, like,
yeah,
like he like has that really cool, like, I'm ignorant, teach me. Like, that's why I love his show. Cause I think that,
yeah,
that allows him to get into a lot of stuff.
He actually also he's kind of said something similar to what we've been talking about. Cause he's like, Bitcoin does work for me and I don't want it broken. Mm-hmm. So tell me why I need to risk what I believe is a really important part of my life and the life of many people that I know and love. How do we risk that? And so I kind of feel the same way. I mean, it is sort of like self-interested, but in a way it's not, because it's like, well, it's convenient, right? Because it's self-interested, but I also feel like it's helpful because I'm to everybody, because I'm like saying, I need to make sure this thing survives. I just, you know, with the Taproot issue, I know that there's a lot of maxis who say, oh, like Taproot wizards was not a problem. It was always the case that you could put arbitrary data on the blockchain and they'll do what they do and they'll pay miner fees and whatever. I think it was a total failure, frankly, that I don't think enough Bitcoiners like will own up to, because
yeah, exactly. I agree. I'm trying to find. Shoot. There's a. Ocean has a block explorer that like shows the that like it allows you to visualize the spam, and it's funny, like they make the spam like they're like circles, it looks like a pool, but there's like brown and like that's like the spam. So it's like I'll try to find it, but yeah, the mechanic has really been hitting this issue, and I wasn't even like fully aware of it, and I'm still learning more because I think that, yeah, I'm definitely coming around to the same place that you're at. And it's, man, it's just hard. Cause I was like so focused on ETFs and then like this was happening. And there's so much to like go deep on when you're really like, you know, you can either like know a lot about like the surface or you can go deep. It's challenging to go deep on everything. Yeah, I think that's a good place to leave it at. but would definitely recommend anybody listening to listen to the 3+ hour interview of Mechanic by Peter McCormick. That was, I'm not even done with it, and it's really good. So about the issues that we've been talking about. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you do the same.